From Autosport.com and Autosport Magazine, I'm Kevin Turner, and this is the Autosport National Podcast. Finally, the UK racing season is properly underway, so we thought we would have a podcast to talk about the events of the weekend, and I've got two special guests to do just that. The first is our group national editor, Stephen Licorice. Stephen, the season has started. Hurrah!
Yes, it started in style now. We've had a few race meetings up to this point, but last weekend there was a total of 8 national race meetings taking place across the UK and Ireland, and we're going to be sort of dissecting some of the key talking points from those on this podcast.
Yes, and the biggest of those, the biggest event, I suppose, really, was the British GT opener at Donington Park. So my second guest is someone who was there, who could tell us the whys, the wheres, the hows. This is our British GT correspondent, Ed Hardy. Ed, how do you enjoy the weekend, getting your season up and running?
Yeah, it was mega. It was certainly better than last year's open at Alton Park, where drivers just kept crashing and going off. A lot more green flag running at this one.
Which was one of the reasons for doing it, wasn't it?
So. Yeah, for sure. I mean, the weather's out. You know, Alton's difficult for rookies, for example, of how tight Twisty is, whereas Donington's a lot better. So, and that proved dividends. And yeah, great weekend. British GT's back, so can't complain.
Yeah, it's pretty good feel as well. We'll get onto the details of that 2-hour race in a moment. But Stephen, I guess as this is the sort of the first one we're doing this year, now that Autosport Magazine's become a monthly, we're going to cover off our national racing slightly differently, aren't we, this season?
Yes, we're making a few tweaks for this year. One of the things we've launched is the Autosport National newsletter, which comes out on every Thursday and is a free email newsletter. Kept the Thursday from when the old weekly magazine used to hit the shelves. And that newsletter will contain a roundup of some of the reports, some of the main news stories, features and opinion pieces from the world of club motorsport. So that's going to be each week. And then each, depending on how many race events there are on any given weekend, we'll include a selection of race reports from those, just like we used to have in the magazine, but they'll be running on the website. And we've also got the weekly Autosport National podcast, which sometimes we'll have guest interviews with drivers, team bosses, key figures from different racing clubs. And then sometimes it'll just be us dissecting some of the race weekends that have just gone.
Yeah, sometimes you'll have to just make do with us, yes, waffling about it. So at this point, we should probably bring in Ed on the basis that he was actually at Donington Park. So I can't decide whether our British GT preview podcast was accurate or not that we did with Johnny Adam last week, Ed. So in the end, the top three, they were two C's motorsport cars and Barwell Motorsport as well, which you did pick out. So in the end, it was the Charles Dawson, Kian Dewis, two C's Merc that won, wasn't it? But it was coming under pressure from your mate, Sandy Mitchell, in the Barwell Lambo, who was flying up quite quickly. So, so tell us, did the race unfold as you expected?
I mean, give me some credit first. Some of my predictions were right. We had the Barwell
cars did race at Donington Park, yes.
Yeah, I think the shock was Charles and Kian being up there, really. We knew Maxi and Kevin would be there, same with Sandy and Alex. It's just in qualifying, Charles Dawson, who did GT4 with Seb Morris last year, just put in a great lap, was 8 tenths quickest in the AM session, 6 tenths quickest overall. And then just translated that pace into the race, didn't offer any chances of cars behind overtaking. I mean, Sandy did his best in the second stint with the pros, putting pressure on Dewis, getting it down to 1.1 second gap, which was about 5 seconds for the pit window. But credit to the two C's pair, just withstood any pressure, any obstacle that came their way. Complaints have already started in the paddock about them, but that's what happens when pairs start winning, isn't it?
Oh yeah, I mean, it's if it's not the balanced performance of the cars, it's the gradings of the drivers. It's like just drive faster. It's easy for me to say, but actually this is quite ominous, isn't it? Barwell that close to, I mean, we know because the Mercs have been quite good at Donington before. The Lambo, Barwell, they're just there or thereabouts all the time. Is it too early to say that Alex Martin and Sandy Mitchell are the championship favourites? It kind of felt like a bit of an ominous result for them.
We always knew that they were going to be up there, and they probably were the pre-season favourites, but I'm sort of looking at thinking, is it actually the Dawson-Jewis pair that are perhaps favourites? Because if they continue their pace into Silverstone, then who knows what might happen, especially because Sandy's only doing a partial campaign this year. He's skipping the Silverstone, Brands and Spa rounds for Patrick Kujala. So I don't think it's going to be as nailed on for that Barwell pair. But they will probably be the biggest hope for Barwell, not actually the number one Lamborghini, because that finished down in sixth. It had a bit of a difficult winter. Rob Collard, reigning champion, skipping Donington for medical reasons. So is it too early to say Sandy Mitchell and Alex Martin for the title? I'd say so.
Yeah, that's probably fair enough. I was just trying to tease a bit of a prediction out of you there. But just probably to run through those top runners in the GT3 class. So it was the 2C's Motorsport Mercedes of Charles Dawson and Kieran Jewis that won, with only 1.1 seconds ahead of the Barwell Motorsport Lamborghini of Alex Martin and Sandy Mitchell. Third was your other 2C's Motorsport Merck. I know you fancy that one as well, Kevin, saying Maxi Gotts. And then we had the Optimum McLaren in fourth, Team Amber Merck in fifth, and Barwell's other car rounding out the top six. So is there anyone else that impressed? I mean, that was kind of that was, they were the dominant cars, weren't they, in the race? Was there anyone else that sort of, yeah, impressed you?
The top three were just on another level to any other car on the day. Like, at one point, after 20 minutes, fourth, Tilbrook was already about 5 to 10 seconds behind Kevin Shea in third. So, the top three are really proven to be the ones to beat just on Sunday's showing. I was quite pleasantly impressed by the Nearys in fifth. You know, it's quite an old school pairing, that, in a way. The father son duo of Richard and Sam Neary. You know, Richard's a true definition of what a gentleman driver is, and to come fifth, showing good pace in the Merc, I was nicely surprised by them. And then Optimum pair in fourth, Kirchhoff and Tilbrook. People thought they might be a lot closer, but for whatever reason, they just couldn't quite get it together. And then Tom Wood, I think, the Beach Dean in eighth. It was a bit of a difficult year for the Aston Martin squad last year. It had Andrew Howard and Jessica Hawkins, but just could never get quite a clean weekend. Tom Wood came in for the Brands finale. Really impressed, got the fastest lap of the race. He's a young driver, British GT3 debut this year in terms of full season. Brands was his first race. And they've got some solid foundations to work on, for sure.
Now, we should, as we interviewed him last week, we should talk about what happened to poor old Johnny Adam. So we're waiting for him to get his 20th series victory, which would put him clear of Phil Keane, and then we can have him back on to talk about his time in British GT. But he was quite a long way off that, Donington, wasn't he? So they ended up 12th in their Blackthorn car. So what trials and tribulations did they have?
Quite typical, that. We very much built up Johnny in that car. Even in the paddock, everyone was fit. When I was speaking to paddock members on Saturday, on Sunday, you know, we were talking about, oh, who could be up there, who could be a good shot for the title. And Johnny Adam was a name mentioned quite often. And don't get me wrong, it's still early. You know, he could still launch a title challenge for that record extending in fifth. But basically, in Saturday, it didn't quite have the pace of the Lambo or the Merc. And then in the race, you know, got yourself up there, was solid, and then in the first stint, his co-driver Giacomo Petrobelli misjudged a gap to lap a Lotus GT4 at Coppice, and instead of just going through like Morgan Tilbrook did moments before, he instead punted Lotus off track.
Other descriptive words are available. Yeah,
so it basically just went wrong there, because the Petrobelli hit the Lotus, caused damage to the car, and it just never recovered. Finished 12th in the end. And yeah. So what happens, really, when you've got a co-driver, and it's not always down to the professional, really.
No, that's right. We talked about that, didn't we, before, as to how important the sort of the amateur side of it is. But I mean, Stephen, if you're looking down the results and looking at someone like, you know, four-time champion Johnny Adam, Ollie Webb has been pretty successful in lots of things he's driven. Callum McLeod's a former, well, Formula Ford champion. I remember him. And yeah, there's really good depth and quality in the British GT field at the moment, isn't there?
Absolutely. The number of factory drivers that the championship attracts these days, it really has gone up a level compared to where it was, say, a decade or more ago. And I think what it was really impressive was the fact that Kian Jewis hasn't raced in the series before and didn't do very much racing at all last year, yet he was able to jump into that car, new driver pairing, and deliver straight away. And that shows how good he is.
And he's a silver as well, in terms of FIA grading.
Yeah, not for long. Not for long, I suspect.
Because he has, for those that perhaps aren't aware of his history, he's won British F4 Championship in 2018.
Beat Jack Doohan to that title.
Yes, yeah, indeed. So you should get him on the F100 then. And he also won the Porsche Carrera Cup title in 2022. So he's got a really... Yeah. Good, solid background. He's always been a driver that's been very impressive, except for when he was in British F3, which sort of stalled his career a little bit and meant he never quite reached the pinnacle in single-seaters. But it's certainly a very encouraging start for him and for his British GT career.
Still a young lad as well. He's only 22, and he was so... Like, to have the championship-star driver in your rearview mirror for a good hour... and to not make any mistakes and to keep the race lead to eventually win, full credit goes to him, really. You know, it wasn't easy what he did on Sunday. So to do that on your debut, get the win, what a drive from him.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I should point out that also he's a former All-Sport BRDC Young Driver Award finalist as well. And actually, GT4 had one or two of those as well, but they didn't win. So talk us through how GT4... Did GT4 go as you expected? Sort of did, didn't it, GT4, I suppose?
Yeah. We were talking earlier, is it early to label Barwell's championship favourites GT3 for GT4? Quite frankly, I don't want to say it too early, but I think it might be nailed on that optimum pair of Mark Horner and Jack Brown is looking pretty good for the title again. I mean, Jack Brown's so impressive. He's looking to become the first driver to win two GT4 crowns. But just how level-headed he is, how down-to-earth and just driven, it's very impressive. He's up there for yet another season. He won the title last year. He could easily have won the title in 23. So... it kind of went as expected that optimum car would win. But, and on the face of it, they won from pole, but they didn't actually get provisional pole on Saturday. That went to the Aidan Neat Lotus from Mahiki. Impressed by Aidan, by the way, 18 years old, former Alpine junior, to get provisional pole on his GT4 debut. But then that got disqualified because the team breached part firming conditions. Basically, a communication error from the team. They thought it wasn't part firming conditions yet. And so they got the car up on the jacks, put it back down while under part firming. No, had no impact on the result, but such a minor thing to then get disqualified for. Put the optimum car in pole and no one really challenged them for victory.
Aidan's one. You'd have covered him earlier in his career, Stephen, wouldn't you?
Yes, things never quite worked out for him in single seaters. He showed flashes of speed across several seasons in British F4, but never really got the consistent results. So it's really interesting to see how he's going now, having moved to sports cars. And I think the way he fought back in the race after that disqualification showed that there's clearly pace in that car, and he could well be one to watch this year. And also, I think it's worth noting that alongside Jack Brown in the Optimum McLaren is Mark Warren this year. And he is an AM driver, but he's a very good AM. And in a couple of years ago, he raced in the Porsche Sprint Challenge GB, and he took a couple of outright victories as an AM driver in that series. So I think the combination of Brown's experience, and now that Brown's won the title, he knows what it takes to win a title. So the combination of him and Warren, I think, is a really,
really
tough one to beat.
He's very strong. And also, Mark was actually a title contender last year for Fisetti and Aston Martin. Didn't quite get the title, but to then have him as the AM driver alongside Jack Brown, who arguably the best driver in GT4, that's going to take some beating for definite. They've got the experience, they've got the pace. One of the things that you need to do to win a title is operate well across the year, not get stupid disqualifications like Mahiki did. And I have no doubt that Optimum will just operate well throughout 2025, and it's going to take something to beat that car.
And that's worth saying as well, although GT4 pack is perhaps not as quite as big as it has been, in the second place century, BMW behind was Charlie Robertson. He's got, I think he's a very quick peddler. We've seen him be quick in lots of things, including single-seaters, before he switched. Seb Morris, a former British GT champion, and some bloke called Phil Keane in the other team, Parker Mercedes. So that's someone who's got experience up at the front. So it's not easy to win, even though it's a bit smaller.
Definitely, and that just underlines just how good a job Brown and Warren did last weekend, and now they've got to keep that up as some of these other partnerships are also new to the grid as they develop. It'll be interesting to see what that happens to that gap over the course of the season.
It was quite weird but mega in a way watching Keane do GT4 in quali. He was fast as in a session, and he's a great benchmark driver for those pros in GT4. He is a former Stig after all, and so impressive on his GT4 debut. I mean, his co-driver John Curry wasn't quite up there, so Phil did everything he could to get that car up to fourth. It's a smaller grid for GT4, but still a lot of good names there.
I mean, Phil's used to that. He's had a lot of that over the years of hauling cars back into contention. So I'm sure he's well versed in that, whether it was his GT4 debut or not. But of course, British GT back out at Silverstone. That's kind of the blue ribbon race of the championship, isn't it? Unless you like Spa, I suppose it'd be Spa or Silverstone. Who do you fancy for Silverstone then?
Silverstone 500 is one of them where it all sort of just goes out the window, really. I mean, last year was manic. It was wet, it was dry, it was wet, it was dry. Cars got taken out. And then it was a surprise winner in Sean Balfe and Adam Smalley, silver and pairing last year for Garage 59. But in terms of Silverstone, the easy answer is just to say Charles Dawson, Kane Jewis, but they'll have these...
No, you can't pick the people that just won.
But
somebody else.
To say that they are going to have the success penalty in the pits, so you can't really just say the winner, because then that's from British GTs. If you win a race or you come second or third, you then have to spend more time in the pit lane. So, away from the top three, I'm intrigued by what the second Barwell Lamborghini can do. It's potentially going to be the race that Rob Collard comes back for, and I think that's going to be the biggest benchmark for Charles Dawson. He had a big gap in AM quali in Donington, but that was without the reigning champ Rob Collard, who was arguably the reason why him and Ricky won it last year. So that's my one to look out for. If Rob is back, then just how much better can that car do? Because Matt Topham was his replacement. And although he did a respectable job, the team was happy with him. Because he'd only done like 2 days of testing before that race. Having Rob back would be a game changer for that Lamborghini alongside Hugo Cook.
Yeah, he's got a lot of experience. And let's face it, a BTCC race winner who's your amateur driver is a little bit of a stretch, perhaps. But I'm not going to get into a controversy about driver grading, because I know that's a universal thing in GT racing at the moment. But Stephen, it wasn't just British GT that kicked off, was it? At Donington Park, we had GB4 and Ginetta Junior as well. So, what were the highlights from those two? And we talked about that before, didn't we? The season preview, they were big grids as well.
Yes, and the GB4 grid was actually even higher than we said. It was 25. Cars on the grid, which is an incredible number for any championship really in this day and age, but especially for a single-seater championship. That was really impressive. And the drivers at the front were some of the ones that we picked out on the podcast last week. So the early championship leader is Dan Ginchard, former Mercedes junior. He was really consistent across the three races, took a second, a fifth and a fourth. So he's grabbed the early lead. But it was the elite drivers that are clearly the elite motorsport drivers are clearly going to be some of the main rivals for him this year. Both Isaac Phelps, who was a Ginetta Junior Winter Series champion, he won a race, and so did Ari Bansal. So and all three elite cars were right in the mix at the front. So they've got a very, very strong lineup there. And all signs are that it could be a really interesting battle between multiple different drivers. You had Alex Berg, who took a comfortable win in the reverse grid race as well. So there's lots of different names in the mix there. And I think it's great to see just how close it was. In qualifying, there was tiny margins separating around 20 drivers on the grid. So I think it could be a really, really hotly contested championship.
It's really taken off, hasn't it? Because let's be honest, GB4 has struggled. It's not been something that I've, on a Monday morning or Sunday evening, been rushing to look at the results for in previous years. But actually, now they've got the old GB3 car, that seems to have just turned it around the winter.
That's it. It's generated a huge amount of interest. New teams, new drivers coming in. And I think the key thing that Donington proved was just how close it is. It's all well and good having 25 drivers on the grid, but if you've got two that are miles up the road of everyone, then it's not necessarily the greatest championships. But there's a whole mix of drivers up at the front, so it bodes well.
And similarly, a decent grid for Ginetta Junior, including presumably two people that by the end of the year will have found their way into a Red Bull Formula 1 seat. Yes. With two of the Red Bull Juniors in Ginetta Junior. I'm not quite sure how many drivers there are between Yuki Tsunoda and our two Red Bull Junior drivers in Ginetta Junior, but I'm not sure Helmut Marko will burn his way through them fairly quickly. So how did they get on?
Well, it was a very good weekend for them on the whole. Rocco Coronel won two of the races and is the early championship leader. He's looked really impressive up there, as did Alfie Slater, who is one of their fellow R Racing drivers. So the three of them, the other Red Bull Junior being Scott Lindblom, they're all up there at the front right from the start. There was actually a coming together between Lindblom and Slater at the Melbourne hairpin in the middle race. So that's set Slater back. He finished ninth in that one, but progressed up to second from ninth in the finale. So that means that Coronel's the one with the early championship lead. But all three of them were up at the front. And also looking really impressive was the Ginetta Junior scholarship driver this year, Fred Green. He was right up in the mix as well. So that's an encouraging start from him.
Now, you were actually there. Did you manage to get a chance when you weren't schmoozing with Sandy Mitchell in the British GT paddock? Did you manage to get to see any other races or look around the paddock and see how busy it was? Did it feel like a nice, strong sort of meeting?
Yeah, especially the Sunday. The traffic on the Sunday, for example, going to Donington Park was all the way down the road, and Sunday was a real strong showing. A lot of people in attendance. You know, you can't, when you're in the media centre, obviously my focus on British GT, but you do, you know, catch a glimpse of the sport races and the Ginettas. You know, sometimes they're well behaved, sometimes they're not so well behaved.
Oh yeah, but that's why they're fun. You're never quite sure what you're going to get.
You expect nothing less from them.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes it's really good when everyone's just head down working in the media centre, a sudden crash comes out in like Ginettas and suddenly the huge roar in the media centre just as everyone rushes to the window or watches the telly as it happens. But no, yeah, real strong showing. Just, I mean, the weather helped. If it was wet, who knows? But a real strong showing at Donington. A lot of people are out, a lot of kids, which is good. You know, families, it's great for families because it's an open paddock in British GT, as in GB3, GB4. So, you know, kids can get up close to the drives, up to the cars, and it had a genuine buzz around it. You know, National Motorsport being back, first weekend of the British GT programme. So, yeah. very much a good buzz around Donington.
Yeah, nice. Good to hear. And our Stephen, as you said at the start, it wasn't the only meeting. We had another seven. So what were the highlights? I mean, we won't go through each one, otherwise we'll be here until next weekend. But what were the highlights around the country?
Lots and lots going on. It was a busy meeting, 750 Motor Club meeting at Brands Hatch. Lots of close races there, as there was up and down the country, really. A couple of other things happening at Silverstone. There was the opening round of the British Endurance Championship. The opening round of the Brit Car Endurance Championship, which is the merging between the British Endurance Championship and the Brit Car Trophy. And that had a nice big grid of over 30 cars. Some decent names like Dan Lloyd and Adam Smalley were up at the front, sharing Porsches with some AM drivers. And so that was a really encouraging start for that sort of revamped championship. And there was also a big grid of Formula Fords. It was a rare chance for a Formula Ford race on the Grand Prix circuit on Sunday at Silverstone. And that attracted a big grid. Some of the drivers that don't necessarily always do a full Formula Ford season were tempted out, like Joey Foster and Chris Middlehurst. That was a great to see so many cars be part of that. And it was Jason Smith that won both of those races. So lots going on. But there was also something a bit older taking place at Silverstone, which I believe you saw.
I know. I think I'm turning into a bit of a walking cliche at this point, to be honest. But I did dip over to the Vinci Sports Car Club day on Saturday. So yeah, it was one of those take the son along. And full disclosure, my dad is one of the organisers at the Fiscar, and they managed to get rid of 33 cars, I think it was, in the end, which is pretty good. And actually, that was won by David Cossingham and Scott Redding in Ferrari's 500 TRC, which is the car that finished seventh at Le Mans in 1957, which I thought was rather cool.
Very cool.
Is good. But it's not my star car from the event. Sorry, Dad. We are standing in the paddock, and then an Alfa Romeo 158 burbled past. So we rushed out to Copps to watch the Patrick Lindsay Memorial Trophy. Patrick Lindsay was a very good historic racer for a very long time, and I think it was him that lent Jim Clark his ERA, the 1964 French Grand Prix. So that's how far back the Lindsay family goes in the VSCC. But there were a couple of Curtis Indy cars at the front. So shout out to Grant Owen and Fred Harper, who put on a fantastic display. I have to say, Fred Harper got increasingly sideways at Copps. I think he probably fried his rear tyres, because he did lose ground in the end to Owen. But they were first and second. But if you take the Indy cars out of it, in third was Peter Greenfield in the Alpha 158. And at one stage, he was being chased by ERA R4D and Richard Bradley, a quite handy sports car driver, of course, in a Maserati 4CL. So you had if you took the Indy cars out of it, ruining the look, you'd have had an Alfa Romeo like the one that won the very first World Championship Grand Prix at Silverstone in 1950, chased by an ERA, which also would have been in the race, or a similar car would have been in the race, and then a Maserati. So it was the Alfa sounded absolutely fantastic. It is the best sounding racing car in British motorsport at the moment. I'm going to stick that out there, unless you happen to come across Rob Hall in his BRM V16. And then the other highlight for me was the GP Italia and Lancashire Trophy all-comers race. It was a three-car fight that bore down to two in the end. Patrick Blakeney-Edwards inevitably, in his phrases, actually won. And nothing against PB, he's a good driver, but I've seen him win so many races in that phrase. And actually, I was kind of hoping that Ed Williams in the Riley Blue Streak Special would beat him. And he was virtually leaning outside the car, like Morgan three-wheeler style, through Copps to try and catch up. And the gap between them was constant for the second half of the race. They were literally exchanging, because I was obviously following it on live timing as well, which seems a bit wrong at VSCC meeting. It feels like you should get posted the results a week later or something, but I was following the live timing, and yeah, they were literally exchanging tenths and hundredths. They went around really driving hard. So yeah, so it was a very pleasant, a very busy meeting, actually, like you were saying, a nice vibe at Donington, Ed. At Silverstone as well, it was much busier than I expected. You know, a lot of cars out there, good grids, and it was a nice day as well.
And it does make such a big difference having a nice day, and those vintage cars, especially the pre-war cars, seeing cars of that age being driven so impressively, so on the edge, it's quite something to watch. And just to sort of tie back together with what we were talking about earlier with British GT, another driver who was in action at Silverstone was Michael O'Brien in a Brabham BT16 Formula 2 car. And he won first time out in that car. It's been recently restored.
Yeah, it wasn't a close fight for him. So he disappeared.
He is a very good driver. But it's, again, great to see that the likes of... you mentioned earlier with Richard Bradley taking part in the event. It's really encouraging to see historic motorsport attracting some really good drivers as well.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I mean, there are some what you'd call sort of clubby sort of drivers who are just out there maybe for their one race of four or five in the year, and they're driving around over. But it's, we said this before, almost any series, category, championship, whatever, the front two, three, five, seven, depending on how much depth there is, they're just really on it. And yeah, with the pleasure of the older cars, apart from that, they all sound different and are loud, to the point where my son actually wanted to get further away from the track. What's that about? Come on, outrageous.
Oh, they're a bit loud. Like, oh yeah, they're supposed to be.
I'll take
him to a Formula E race next and see what he thinks of that. But of course, the older cars, because the contact patch is usually very small, very skinny tyres, no downforce. Downforce hadn't been invented as a thing yet, so they are quite comfortably sideways a lot of the time. So they're quite there. And of course, you can see them working the wheel, giant steering wheels, virtually hanging out the side of the car. I mean, it's quite a spectacle, I have to say. So, yeah, if you've not done it, I'd recommend going to trying a VSCC meeting at some point. They are good fun.
It's an assault on all the senses, really, as well as
the smell is amazing. Well. That was one of the first things I said as we walked in, actually. It was, I love the smell of old racing. So I sound really old now. Someone else say something. Stephen, what else did we have on the weekend?
Well, we also, at Snetterton, there was a busy BRSCC meeting as well, which... featured a number of different categories in action, including the Mini 7 Racing Club, which they're one of my favourites, I must admit. Just that those classic minis always deliver close racing. And it was Rupert Deith who was one of the drivers to beat this time around.
Well, he's been quit for a long time too, yes, isn't he? Yeah, yes. Yeah, absolutely. So, before we finish off, what are the next... I'll go to Ed first. When's your next outing to an event? What's your next one?
Well, it's Silverstone again this month. It's quite a busy month for British GT, getting the first two rounds in quickly. Silverstone last weekend of April, promising to be a great race. It's the championship's set up nicely now for the rest of the year.
And I think I'm right in saying that we'll have GB3 there as well, won't we, for that one? That'll be the GB3 opener. I think that's looking quite good as well, isn't it, Stephen?
Yes, again, that's another series of a new car for this year. So we'll be talking... looking ahead to that on a future edition of the Autosport National Podcast. And also that same weekend is when the British Touring Car Championship gets underway, along with its range of support series at Donington Park. They are, and so again, that would be something we're looking ahead previewing in the coming weeks.
And what have you got coming up?
Well, as over the last few days, we've had various media days for the Total Sport category, so getting towards the start of the season now. But I'm also looking forward to attending the Donington Historic Festival. I went last year and really enjoyed it, and it's back to being a three-day event this year with a whole mix of historic motorsport as well. So I'm looking forward to that at the start of May.
Excellent. And that means I'm actually at a national meeting before either of you for once. That's pretty unusual, because I think, oh dear, such a reverting to type once more. I will be at the Goodwood members meeting this weekend. So hopefully next week's podcast, we can have a little bit of a chat about that, because I appreciate it. So it's limited access, although I think they're probably streaming it. So you can keep an eye, I think that's right. So I'll be good with members meeting, so this time next week hopefully we'll have a chat about that. But thank you very much to Ed, thank you very much to Stephen, thanks for listening. We'll be back soon with another Autosport National Podcast. Boom, that's a mic drop.